Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. You will see Dane's name when I type in the chat. We share the account. I will put my contact information in case anyone needs to get a hold of me. But we're very pleased to have you here today. Just a few reminders before we start. A copy of today's PowerPoint and related files are on our webpage at nysrti.org under Professional Development and then Webinars. I will put the link in the chat for you, but I'm thinking you found it since you're on the webinar. All upcoming professional development opportunities can be found on our webpage, so please stay tuned into that because we post things regularly throughout the year. During today's webinar, please use the chat box for any questions or comments you may have. And at the end of today's webinar, we will share a link to a very, very brief evaluation, and we appreciate your feedback. If you could take just a minute to complete that, we do appreciate that. So we're pleased to have with us to present the fourth webinar in a five-session webinar strand, Strand 23, Using Universal Design for Learning to Support Tier 1 Instruction. Today's topic is the language of UDL, Shifting Mindsets, and we are excited to have with us today two UDL implementation specialists from CAST, Melissa Sanjay and Bill Wilmot. And at this time, it is my pleasure to welcome back Melissa and Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Excited to be back. Again, my name is Bill Wilmot. I am an implementation specialist at CAST. And Melissa, you want to introduce yourself as well?
Sure. Hi, my name is Melissa Sanjay. I'm also an implementation specialist at CAST, and I will be communicating with you in the chat today.
Melissa and I are today, this week, in the same room, which we haven't been every week. So excited to that, to be here and join in. Please jump in on the chat anytime you have any questions or want to say something, or if you want to raise your hand, there's a little person raising their hand at the top of the screen that you can use to speak. It looks like, as of right now, Kathleen and Lisa, thank you for joining us. So I am going to jump in. We started talking this summer about the UDL mindset. We've been talking about it for a long time. And really the reason for that is because we've introduced the UDL guidelines and we've taken a look at those. We're actually going to take an even deeper look at those next time. Those have specific checkpoints. And we found that people were treating the UDL guidelines, those checkpoints, really as kind of a checklist and thinking that they had to go through every single lesson and check off all of those checkpoints. And that's really not how we want people to look at them, use them, and really want to make a kind of deeper mindset shift. So we put together a presentation specifically focused on mindset and what does the change of mindset really entail. So the big question for today is how do I become more conscious of my own mindset and help others think about theirs? So the goals for today are to identify a UDL mindset and language and to develop language for reframing thinking, your own thinking, the thinking of others, and for starting conversations or redirecting conversations in a more UDL direction. As soon as I started working on a session on mindset and I typed mindset into Google, you get a lot on growth mindset. So that's the majority of what's out there about mindset, but there are a lot of other versions of mindset and a lot of other mindsets. And so a lot of this is really drawn from a bunch of different areas. Thinking about mindset, things like global mindset, entrepreneurial mindset, growth mindset, and UDL mindset, to think about what is a mindset, and then what then is a UDL mindset, and how do we think about shifting mindset. So take a moment to write down on a post-it or share in the chat some of your goals for this session. So pause here and write down some goals. Thank you. So Melissa's encouraging us to type our questions and comments here. Kathleen wants to understand what the UDL mindset means. And Melissa's hoping to get a better understanding of what shifts are necessary to implement UDL in her context. We will fill you in a little bit, Kathleen, on the first three sessions, but we're not going to go over the whole thing because that would take 4.5 hours. but we'll start with a little bit of a review from the first sessions, and I think you'll pick up a lot of it as we go. I am really interested in getting feedback on the mindset presentation and the framing so that I can improve it. Especially, there's a section on research, and I'd love to know if that works for people. So definitely fill out the survey as Molly suggested. All right, so let's jump in with a quote. Your beliefs become your thoughts become your words become your actions become your habits become your values become your destiny. Good place to start with Gandhi. He never uses the word mindset, but it's very much the same idea, that thoughts, actions, words align your habits, and you'll see how that plays out in some of the tools that we are using. From Yoda, Star Wars, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. That's on the negative side. So in Universal Design for Learning, we are all about options. So your options for perception are to follow along with the webinar slides. The first link in the chat is a link to the slides up at the top there, and Molly also shared those on the website. This is a bit.ly right here at the bottom of that screen that will also take you to the slides. Definitely jump in and participate. There will be times when we're hoping that you're going to be writing things together in a Google Doc and watching what other people are saying, so definitely jump in. This is not a sit back and watch it come at you webinar. If you're interested in tweeting, go for it. Do that. And what the great thing about being on a webinar is that you can stand, sit, stretch, lay on the floor, and we'll never know. All right, get your fidgets and post-its around you so we can jump in. So think of a personal framing. Think of a time when someone clearly had a different mindset than you and that you seemed to be talking past each other. So identify a time like that. Share in the chat if you want, or just think of it for yourself. I asked this question one time in a live presentation, and somebody said, every time I talk to my mother. Hopefully it's not every time you talk to your mother, but could be. All right. I think it's important for all of us to articulate a goal for today. So if you haven't done that for yourself yet, you can do that now. Let's go back and look at how UDL integrates with RTI. We think of UDL primarily integrating with Tier 1 instruction, the most universally designed, accessible Tier 1 instruction to make the first universal instruction as successful and as accessible as possible. Really, we would look at Universal Design for Learning as a possible tool to make every tier of instruction as accessible as possible. And as you go up into more intensive interventions, what often happens is that the curriculum is narrowing, it's becoming much more focused. That doesn't mean that there's not opportunity all the way along the way, to integrate options and to integrate especially some forward-focused and productive coaching around self-knowledge and self-assessment and self-reflection of how students learn best. As those groups become smaller and more intensive, there's more and more opportunity for that. So really, we want to think about how do we make curriculum and tiered interventions accessible to all learners. So here's the quick review, Kathleen, of the core UDL concept. So we started with architecture, and we looked at universal design. I heard on the radio just this morning a story about George H.W. Bush, who recently passed away, and his role in the passage of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And it was an incredible story to hear that it had been a bipartisan effort that had been going on for some time, but it had never happened. And there was resistance around around the passage of it because people thought it would cost money. And the incredible quote, I had to pull it up on my phone, sorry. The incredible quote from the signing ceremony is, "Let the shameful walls of exclusion come tumbling down." Right? That's what the Americans with Disabilities Act really did for us, and did for us especially in things like architecture and design. So it made those fields much more accessible more broadly, and it acknowledged this idea that the barrier is in the environment. We looked at neuroscience, and we looked at the broad research support for the idea that variability is the norm, that if you walk into a classroom of 20 learners, you have 20 different learners who are going to approach things in 20 different ways. We have a webinar with six people. We have six different approaches to learning. And finally, we dove into the UDL guidelines, which we'll go into even more deeply next time. And the UDL guidelines are really have the goal as their end point of expert learning. And expert learners are purposeful and motivated. They're resourceful and knowledgeable. They're strategic and goal-directed. And the guidelines are really built on that body of neuroscience research. And their practices that promote expert learning. So that's our very quick review of UDL. As we're going, definitely jump in with questions if there are if there's background that would be helpful. Other options for representation, there's a concept map here that maybe Melissa could link in the chat. If you go to the other presentation, we can link that in the chat. If you want to see kind of the concept map of the UDL mindset, and there's a list of resources which will be at the end as well. Definitely jump in and share your questions and comments. Tamara, welcome back. All right, so write down either in the chat or for yourself, what do you believe about learners, and what is your vision of an effective learner? So take a minute to think about those questions. All right. I believe all learners can be successful. I also believe it is important to start with building on strengths found in the learner. Learners have to want to learn and be interested in the subject. Melissa believes all learners are variable. Excellent. Melissa just put the link to the mindset concept map. If you want to look at it, you can click out to that. The one that was in there before didn't work. All right. So what is a mindset? A mindset is really a shortcut for thinking. It's a frame for your attention, a way of interpreting, speaking, and acting in the world. And it's a changeable way of looking at the world. So you might have one mindset at home related to your own offspring, and a different mindset at school related to the young people that you work with. You might have a different mindset when you're working with faculty or when you're working with a spouse. So a mindset is changeable depending on context and changeable over time. In contrast with a worldview, which is a broader way of seeing the world, it's based on your fundamental values and it's slower to change. So here are the key aspects. Kind of what I did was look across growth mindset, UDL mindset, entrepreneurial mindset, and global mindset, and a couple of others, and look at what do we mean by mindset. So here are some of the key aspects of mindset. It comes down to your beliefs and your assumptions that are built into those beliefs, the language that you use, the habits and practices, kind of your everyday approach to things, and then really crucial is the framing. What do you pay attention to? How do you interpret what you're paying attention to? Which often involves a kind of conceptual priming, points you in a direction. And then there are skills and sensitivities. And by skills, I mean what you can do. And then by sensitivity, I mean how you know when to use those skills. I started watching The Great British Baking Show. Anybody seen The Great British Baking Show? What is amazing to me about that is that they're all really good bakers. It's an amateur baking contest, essentially. They're all really good amateur bakers. And part of being a really good amateur baker is knowing when something is not going the right way. So if they're using a cream that they're putting into a pastry and they can see that it's not the right consistency, they'll just throw it out and start over. Because they know using that, to me that's a really good example of they have the skills to do what they need to do and they have the sensitivity to know when something is right and when it's not. All right, so in a UDL mindset, what we're really doing is we're shifting our focus. We have for a long time, here's our learner confronting a barrier. We have for a long time been focused on the learner for all the right reasons, right? We wanted to be student-centered. We wanted for the learning to be engaging for students, so we wanted to focus on the student. And UDL really asks us to shift our attention to focus on the barrier on behalf of the student, to think about how do we design from the beginning to remove and minimize barriers. And we do that by providing options. Okay, so let's do a little language task because this will helps highlight really the UDL mindset very well. And I think that when you're looking at shifting mindset, language is often the best place to start, because that is the tangible thing that everybody is, that's the tangible currency that we're all using to exchange ideas. So let's restate the barrier as being in the curriculum, not the learner, okay? So we'll go from a sentence like, this group of students can't read, to the text complexity could be a barrier to learning the content, okay? So often you'll go from a sentence that is either about a student or about a group of students, they're the subject, to a sentence where the demand or the learning environment or the curriculum is the subject of the sentence. Okay, another one. These students can't write. starting from that, going to writing to show your understanding could present a barrier. Okay, so those are the kinds of shifts that we're talking about. All right, now we're going to jump in and we're going to try some ourselves. So they're kind of small, but zoom in with your glasses and take a look at these. So the first one is Eliana doesn't have strong enough English skills to do well on today's activity. I am embarrassed to say that I have used this slide probably 10 times and still have not fixed Eliana doesn't have a strong enough English skills to do well on today's activity. So I apologize for that. So think about how you would reframe this sentence and make it not about Eliana, but about the activity. Have ideas, jump in and type them in the chat. All right, so Melissa says, today's activity needs to be redesigned so that students can access it regardless of their English skills. Good, so it's a sentence about the activity versus a sentence about Eliana. This activity needs options built in to support students with low English skills. Melissa's a prolific typer. I wrote, today's activity requires strong English skills to complete, is what that's supposed to say. Melissa's already taking the next step of redesigning the activity, of designing in options. All right, so if Maria could decode better, she would thrive in science class. So sometimes you have to, with these, you have to infer what the goal is. So in this case, my inference would be that the goal is to thrive in science class. So let's say she is learning about the impact of plastic bags on the environment. So let's say that's the goal. If Maria could decode better, she would thrive in science class. So how would we reframe that one? I know it's scary to type and share something with relative strangers, but jump in and try. We're not going to bite. Science class requires Maria to decode in order to access the science. That is a clear statement about the demands of the curriculum, demands of science class. This gets back to that idea that we talked about early on, that really you want to be assessing one thing at a time, right? Given where Maria is with her decoding skills, it sounds like, in science class, probably every other class, you're simultaneously assessing decoding and science, her science content knowledge. An assessment that does that doesn't actually tell you about her science content knowledge. It probably tells you more about her decoding skills. And of course, we want her to be able to decode. So you would have a separate goal. Absolutely. So Kathleen, perhaps technology could help Maria better understand science class. So Kathleen is also jumping into, well, what are the options that we could give her to make it more accessible? Wonderful. So Eleanor can't pay attention in class when directions are given. This also requires some inference and kind of imagining how the directions might be delivered. Eleanor is actually a student of mine. Melissa says directions are not given in a way that engages Eleanor. Sounds like it. Sure. Perhaps Eleanor should be asked to repeat the directions given. So that's a good strategy for ensuring that Eleanor has understood it. I would challenge you to kind of try to flip that around, and how do we put the way that the directions are given at the beginning of that sentence? How do we make that the subject of the sentence? From what we were talking about last time, you know, really embracing that role of teacher as designer. So how do we as teachers design a way to make that more accessible? So mine is the directions are only given one way, which isn't working for Eleanor. All right, they get harder because it moves now into the social emotional realm, which is, we often think about providing options and providing accommodations for in the academic realm, but not always in the social emotional realm. So Alex's home life is terrible. So he really isn't in the state of mind he needs to be when he gets to school. So how would we reframe that as a statement about the learning environment, about the school environment, about the learning context? So Melissa says, we need a routine or strategy to help Alex get in a learning state of mind when he arrives at school. Excellent. So thinking about the design of the context, how do we make it possible for Alex to engage? It's funny, I had always thought of Alex as a girl, but Alex could be a boy too. My first year of teaching, I had an Alex as a girl. What about this one? This one is hard. David is our worst discipline issue. So how do you think about that in terms of redesigning the school environment or a statement about the school environment? Very tricky to come up with. So Melissa says, we are not engaging David in learning, so he engages in other maladaptive behaviors. Melissa is excellent at the social emotional stuff. I said the school environment and the demands are not working for David to engage with learning. So you get the idea of how the UDL mindset is really flipping the whole idea of how we engage students on its head. Of course, students have a responsibility to engage with their learning, but before that, before students even walk in the door, we take on the responsibility as teachers for designing a learning environment that's going to be engaging for them. All right, so let's look a little bit more at the UDL mindset. This is a link here and the bit.ly to the mindset map template. We're going to be using this to really look carefully at a couple of videos. And we're going to be watching them to think about, what do we hear about beliefs? How is language used differently? What habits and practices promote and sustain a UDL mindset? How would we interpret our experiences differently with the UDL mindset, and what are we called to pay attention to? So click out to that bit.ly that Melissa just put in there in the chat, and we're going to look at this mindset map and type into that. You can write it on a separate piece of paper if that's easier, and we're going to do that while we're watching a video. So actually, Molly, probably we don't want to share it because we won't be able to watch the video while we're looking at that. Sorry about that. I led you astray. So Give me a thumbs up if you were able to get into the Mindset Map template. Okay. Great. All right, so let's go and we'll look at this next, we'll look at this video. I have a couple of videos to look at, and I think we'll have time to do both. This is a great video anyway. It's a piece of a webinar. So we're doing a webinar within a webinar. And it's an art teacher talking about the evolution of her practice and her learning about UDL. And so she takes the same basic art project and redesigns it each year over 3 years. And then what she's doing is showing us images that students came up with and kind of narrating her development over those 3 years and how things changed. So there's a quick kind of 45-second introduction, and then we'll hear her narrating her experience. So listen for language that she's using that's different. Listen for beliefs that are embedded in that language. Listen for habits and practices that she employs and embraces. And listen for the framing. What is she paying attention to? How is she interpreting that? And what skills is she using, and when is she using those? All right, let's start the video, and we'll listen, and we'll kind of create this mindset map of UDL together.
Hold on 1 second. I'm adjusting the audio.
Sure thing.
There we go.
Artist who has committed a daily practice of creating a collage. He has a lifetime practice as an educator and as a human. Centered learning and removing barriers so all students can access curriculum. He believes that relationship is education. Lizzie's going to share her progression of understanding and implementing UDL within a social issue art unit. Take it away, Lizzie.
Thank you, Liz. So in my first year of understanding and using UDL, I did a unit on social issues with my Foundations of Art students. The goal for this unit that year was to create an artistic response to a social issue using materials and media of your choosing. At the time, I was pleased with the goal and thought it allowed for lots of options. I also created a PowerPoint to share artwork with students and had students create a proposal using lots of different methods like conferencing, voice recording, and on paper. Unfortunately, the outcomes were heavily biased on what I had chosen to share. Many students found relevancy within the goal, but many did not. I heard a lot from students within that year. Most issues don't affect me. Upon reflecting on this unit, I realized that I was successful using the guidelines for communication, but I was super tech-heavy. The resources I shared and wanted the students to use weren't accessible at all. They were long, long, long websites on a sheet of paper. They weren't hyperlinks or QR codes. And honestly, the goal was not clear. The next year, I thought about what I had learned before and started to deepen my understanding of the guidelines and my implementation of them. I also was responding to the presidential election results while planning this lesson. So I altered my goal for students to create a piece of art that responds to a social issue through causing a viewer to interact, think, or react. So instead of just a PowerPoint with flat images, I incorporated videos and had students reflect and answer questions. I also incorporated more relevant artists. The outcomes, again, were mainly successful. Students had definitely found room for their voices within, and reflecting on the second year, I found that I had done a better job of providing options for perception. So I used QR codes and videos. I definitely increased relevancy and value for students, especially in response to the election results. But I could have improved my feedback for students, and students were not able to reach part of the goal, the portion about causing a viewer to interact, think, or react. I just hadn't planned or scaffolded that in any way. So moving into this year right now, I looked hard at the past 2 years, the goal and the guidelines. And I focused heavily on options for sustaining effort and persistence, comprehension, and executive function. I really looked at where I'd fallen down in planning in the previous years and worked hard at those areas. So my goals did not change at all, but my planning for the entirety of the goal did. So again, I used a slideshow with videos and contemporary artists, except this time I varied how the response would be. So some would be private in notes, and other responses would be public on a post-it. So some of the responses were to questions like, have you ever really thought about how it might feel in another person's skin, gender, or religion? What might be different about your life? I also searched for relevant contemporary artists that mirrored my students and their backgrounds and their interests. So we looked at work such as Ai Weiwei's piece that wraps migrant life jackets around Berlin's Konzerthaus and Hank Willis Thomas's interactive installation Truth. We also watched spoken word poetry by Maida Del Valle, Why I'm Loud as Hell, and Darius Simpson and Scott Bosley's poems, The First Time I Realized I Was Black. Students' responses to this day of hard watching, listening, responding, and reflecting were things like, why can't we do more stuff like that? This was the best day of class so far. And that was lit, which is my favorite thing they say. The second part of my goal was a huge focus in my planning. I wanted to ensure students knew how artists engage viewers, so we looked at a lot of work. I had them all printed out so students could touch them. And they curated the images together, so they saw how artists interacted with viewers, they shocked viewers, and they intrigued viewers. They collaboratively took notes, and they shared out their findings. This sharing of information helped later on when students were creating their work and how they could become master artists or expert artists, and they reached their goals by looking at those that they had started before they worked on their pieces. And so also creating interactive artwork was imperative in making the goal relevant and engaging. As students entered the room on different days, I gave them sheets of paper, one with the hashtag I wish my teacher knew and one with the hashtag I need. They filled them out and they put them in the room. Some are poignant and heart-wrenching. I need people to not think every Muslim is the same. While others were typical high school, I need clear skin, good grades, and healthy friendships. I wish my teacher knew that sometimes I don't understand something, I don't usually ask them to explain again. And I wish my teacher knew that students learn differently, that some students can work by listening to their own music, and how to interact with students to get to know them. The research students did in the past has certainly been lacking in accessibility and relevancy. But I knew I couldn't possibly find or support every social issue. So I created a Symbaloo board with a variety of resources. I wanted them to understand what a good resource looked like, and I wanted them to dig into those resources. And I wanted them to figure out what they could do with the information. So I shared with them podcasts and videos and websites in that Symbaloo board. The student outcomes were stronger this year in idea generation and in depth. Students understood the topics they were working with, like the piece on the left. This student wrote in her artist statement, my piece is on gender inequality and the abuse of women all over the world. I chose this because it's an issue that I've always been interested in, and I finally got the time to learn more about it. On the right, it is, students were making connections from the research into their own lives, and the artist statement from on the right says, this artwork depicts racism between white Americans and African Americans. What is obvious is the same administrator saying two different things to both men in the picture. Next slide. And students were connecting the artists we had looked at to their work. The student artist on the left used a similar process to Kara Walker, utilizing a silhouette to simplify portions of his imagery while also focusing on race and the hatred he's experienced for being black. Students knew how to represent their ideas and engage the viewer in ways that was so impressive. The students on the right created an interactive piece that hung in the hallway, prompting the school community to respond to the question, what do you think of when you see me, with the imagery of a woman wearing a hijab?
Oh, Lizzie, this is crazy. This is so moving. And you're getting comments like that from the viewers as well. So we'll let you keep going.
So in closing, I want to share that my understanding of UDL has grown deeper in the past 3 years, and so has my implementation. The first unit I shared was not a failure by any means. And this year's unit is not the end of this work either. by constantly reflecting on the learning and the goals while also continuing to deepen my understanding of UDL, the better I support my students becoming expert learners and expert artists.
Okay, good. Let's pause there for 1 second. Take a minute to go to the Mindset Map template. Write down anything that you heard in terms of language, beliefs, habits and practices, and the way that she framed her thinking. Okay, let us now look at the second video. We're just going to add to the same mindset map. This is a video, short 3 minute video, 3.5 minute video that is specifically about UDL, trying to summarize UDL. So in that, you'll also hear some of the language, habits and practices, beliefs, and framing. So Molly's going to start that for us and then just record anything in that mindset map.
Diverse group of students. And so does this teacher. And this one. Most do. In fact, research shows that the way people learn is as unique as their fingerprints. What does this mean for teachers of today? Classrooms are highly diverse and curriculum needs to be designed from the start to meet this diversity. Universal Design for Learning is an approach to curriculum that minimizes barriers and maximizes learning for all students. Whoa, that's a fancy term. Universal Design for Learning. Let's unpack it a bit. Let's think about the word universal. By universal, we mean curriculums that can be used and understood by everyone. Each learner in a classroom brings their own background, strengths, needs, and interests. Curriculum should provide genuine learning opportunities for each and every student. Now let's think about the word learning. Learning is not one thing. Neuroscience tells us that our brains have three broad networks. One for recognition, the what of learning, one for skills and strategies, the how of learning, and one for caring and prioritizing, the why of learning. Students need to gain knowledge, skills, and enthusiasm for learning, and a curriculum needs to help them do all three. But every learner is unique, and one size does not fit all. So how do we make a curriculum that challenges and engages diverse learners? This is where the word design comes in. A universally designed building is planned to be flexible and to accommodate all kinds of users, with and without disability. It turns out that if you design for those in the margins, your building works better for everyone. Curb cuts and ramps are used by people in wheelchairs, people with strollers, and people on bikes. Captioning on TV serves people who are deaf, people learning English, people in gyms, and spouses who get to sleep at different times. UDL takes this idea and applies it to the design of flexible curriculum. UDL goes beyond access because we need to build in support and challenge. So how do we use the UDL framework to make learning goals, methods, materials, and assessments that work for everyone? First, ask yourself, what is my goal? What do I want my students to know, do, and care about? Then ask, what barriers in the classroom might interfere with my diverse students reaching these goals? To eliminate the barriers, use the three UDL principles to create flexible paths to learning so that each student can progress. Number one,
provide multiple means of representation, present content and information in multiple media, and provide varied support. Use graphics and animation, highlight the critical features, activate background knowledge, and support vocabulary so that students can acquire the knowledge being taught. Number two, provide multiple means of action and expression. Give students plenty of options for expressing what they know and provide models, feedback, and support for their different levels of proficiency. Number three, provide multiple means of engagement. What fires up one student won't fire up another. Give students choices to fuel their interest and autonomy. Help them risk mistakes and learn from them. If they love learning, they will persist through challenges. And remember, always keep in mind the learning goal. Get rid of barriers caused by the curriculum and keep the challenge where it belongs. And that's it. Okay, quick recap. Show the information in different ways. Allow your students to approach learning tasks and demonstrate what they know in different ways. And offer options that engage students and keep their interest. Universal design for learning equals learning opportunities for all. For more information on UDL, go to www.cast.org.
Great. Thank you, Molly. So go back into that mindset map template and type in beliefs, language, habits, practices, and framing that you heard. One of the key beliefs that I heard over and over again is one size does not fit all, and variability is the norm. That's one way we say it often here. Also interesting that there are several in here about examples, that the examples that Lizzie used, it was important to her that they were relevant to the students. And when students weren't finding them relevant, she knew that she had to adjust. One of the things that I find incredibly impressive about her narration of her growth and changes are the habits and practices. It seems like a normal part of her everyday teaching life to self-reflect, redesign at the end of the year and go into the next year with a refined plan. Part of that was gathering feedback from students. For the language, we heard lots of things like options for perception, executive function, expert learning, barriers, designed to meet diversity, the brain networks, multiple means of engagement, representation, action, and expression. And for the framing we were paying attention to, she was paying attention to what the goal was and how she provided options to get there. All right, so let's move forward. So here's a little bit about why mindset matters so much and how important framing is. So these are two researchers that were doing research on how people made decisions. They described a city, a fictional city, called Addison. And Addison had a crime problem. And so they created two different reports detailing all of Addison's crime problems, long reports. And they put in two different metaphors describing the crime problem. In one, they described it as a beast attacking the city, and in the second one, they described it as a virus infecting the city. Now, it's a minor difference, and in some versions of the experiment, actually, this only appeared once, this metaphor. They only put it in the first sentence of the report. In others, it appeared throughout the report. And people were supposed to make a decision about what should be done to decrease the crime problem. And then they coded those for how they fit into two different categories. Should it be a law and order response or a prevention and education response? And so these are the results. So of the people who received the report that described it as a beast attacking the city, 74% thought that it should be an enforcement response versus 56% thought it should be an enforcement response for the virus infecting the city. And you'll see on the reform, that's the dark gray one, in the beast scenario, it was about 25%, and that went up to about 45% in the virus scenario. So this is just a very simple example of thinking about how framing has an impact on people's decision making. It's really a pretty profound result for such a small difference. And in fact, it's stronger than the result of when you factor in what political party people are associate themselves with. It's actually stronger than that result. Here's another example. So I was walking down the street outside of our offices here, and I came around a corner and I saw this sign, and I had no idea what it meant. Chair rental opportunities available. Does anybody want to take a guess in the chat what that means, or what the context was, or what the framing was? Rental agency for chairs and tables for events. Melissa, I like that one. Thank you. My mind went immediately to wheelchairs because my mom is in a wheelchair and motorized wheelchairs are really expensive. Molly says hair salon. Molly, you get the prize. It is, in fact, a hair salon. But you need specialized knowledge to know that that's a hair salon. And we can ask Molly afterwards how she knows. So without the context, without the right framing, the sentence chair rental opportunities available might not even make sense to somebody. All right, so this slide is a little bit not working for me right now, but this was a quick summary of some of the beliefs, language, habits, and framing. So some core beliefs of UDL are that variability is the norm, variability is predictable, and part of the educator's job is to design for that variability. The maybe Melissa could put a link in that in the.
I tried to cut and paste it, but it didn't go well.
Let me get to that slide so I can at least talk us through it. The language are, we heard lots of things like this in the videos, providing options, design, universal engagement, representation, action and expression, expert learners. To me, expert learners is an important piece of language. We think about expert learning not as a destination, but as an ongoing process of personal development. Habits and practices are things like setting rigorous goals, anticipating barriers, designing to minimize barriers, providing options for learners, and crucial to what Lizzie was talking about in that video is constantly iterating your design, right? Never thinking this lesson is done, but taking in feedback along the way based on student learning and what students are saying and doing, and redesigning from there. And finally, in terms of the framing, we're shifting our attention. We shift the focus from the student to the curriculum, the learning environment, the instructional methods, as I like to say, on behalf of the student. Watch for barriers. We're looking for barriers. In terms of interpretation, we're looking at student learning and behavior and realizing those are a response to the learning environment and to the curriculum, and trying to read those behaviors. As Melissa likes to say, student behaviors are information. They're giving us information that we can then feed back into our design. And in terms of skills and sensitivity, when do I use my designer skills, my teacher as a designer skills? When do I use my teacher as an instructor skills? And when do I use my coach skills? Thinking carefully about how to implement each of those so that we can minimize the amount of time we're talking at students and maximize the amount of time that students are active and participating in their learning. So the strange, mysterious digital goo that's dripping down our screen disappears after a few slides here, and it turns orange. We could not figure out why that was happening, so I apologize. One of the quotes that I think really embodies the UDL mindset is this idea that the curriculum disables the learner. Not that disabilities are inherent to the person, but they arise from a mismatch between the demands of the curriculum and the skills that the learner has available to them in that particular context at that particular moment. So one other concept that I think is really important in this when talking about mindset is the idea of confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is a well-documented phenomenon by which people tend to interpret new information as confirming their current belief. So you can imagine how that makes shifting mindset to change how you're thinking very difficult, because you have to simultaneously think in the new mindset, and then you have to interpret information in that mindset to reinforce that mindset. That's why I think starting with language is really valuable and really important, because language is it's public, it's out there, and we can all kind of debate about how the language is characterizing teachers, learners, and the curriculum. Confirmation bias slows mindset shifts and interferes with communication across mindsets. So let's talk a little bit about the mindset shift. How do we go from a one-size-fits-all mindset to a UDL mindset? So let's think about how we would reframe some of these conversations. We've had these conversations with colleagues, sometimes even with students, where you're walking down the hall and somebody says something out of frustration, and you think, well, that does not exactly fit with what I believe, but how do I respond to that? So think of statements that you've heard or even spoken in a moment of frustration, statements that don't fit the UDL mindset, that look back kind of at a one-size-fits-all mindset and even sometimes a blaming-the-student mindset, and think about how to reframe these. So here's an example to start us off. A colleague comes up to you and says, Angela never pays attention in class. Let's take a minute to actually script what our response would be to that colleague. So again, this is similar to the previous exercise. This is a statement about the student. Is there a way that we can respond to it by thinking, helping them think about the learning context? So if you have an idea, put it into the chat. I'm going to write one up here myself. Looks like Melissa's writing one too. It's tricky. You really have to imagine yourself into the situation. You might even imagine a particular colleague saying this to you and how you would respond to that. So Kathleen says, Angela must have an awful lot going on at home. She seems very distracted. So Kathleen is acknowledging that Angela must have a lot going on, and also stating it in a way that acknowledges the frustration that comes along with when a student is not paying attention in your class. Angela says, Melissa says, I might ask a series of questions related to the environment, or ask what are the conditions under which she pays attention, what is going on during the apparently rare moments when she is engaged. So Melissa is doing a little probing, a little digging. What are the conditions so under which she pays attention? So she's reframing, looking at the positive. When it is going well, what does that look like? So she's effectively trying to shift the person's attention away from Angela and whatever Angela is not doing to what can Angela do, with the idea of then using that as a starting point for a conversation. I wrote a question with a period at the end of it. How have you tried to engage her with options for sustaining her attention in class? So probing a little bit, asking for what the teacher has done already. So Barry, again, your colleague comes up to you in the hall. Barry never uses any of the resources I give him for his assignments. It's like he doesn't even know they exist, even though they're sitting on his desk. What would you say to that colleague? So Melissa says, if he is completing the assignment successfully, if Barry is completing the assignment successfully, she might say, wow, that is great that he doesn't need those scaffolds. Sometimes we want students to use scaffolds because we like them, not because they're useful to those students. This is actually a major reason that we talk about providing options in UDL, is that if you think about all of the scaffolds and accommodations that you would provide for one particular student, those might be useful to lots of different students, and you might not know that, or they might not be useful. So providing all of those as options up front gives them the opportunity to self-select and find the tools that will work for them. So if he's not successful, Melissa says, what do you think he needs to support him instead? Great. So what about my ninth graders don't know where to start when writing an essay? They don't do any planning. Now we've gone from Barry to the entire ninth grade class. What would we say to this person? So Kathleen is going to jump right in and give a little bit of advice to the grumpy teacher and say, maybe you should start with a little bit of modeling. Show them what the planning might look like. That's great. So the responses to these often are probing questions, some version of reassurance and looking at the positive. And trying to imagine when things have been successful, and giving advice, or you know, if you have the relationship with the person, you can just tell them to snap out of it. So mindsets are build slowly and gradually, and I kind of think of them as delicate little flowers that, if you don't care for them and you water them carefully, over time they will wilt and die. And so in the context of lots of other lots of other demands and lots of other forces, and even mindsets that contradict a UDL mindset, you really have to have a plan for going into how am I going to sustain this mindset and these ideas over time. So this is a link that Melissa just put in the chat to a UDL mindset plan. Feel free to use that, and you can make a copy of this this version that's linked here and create your own UDL mindset plan. It's always good to go into these things with it's almost a kind of a reminder and a message to yourself of how you want to approach this. So start by articulating your own beliefs and thinking about how your beliefs align with some of the basic UDL beliefs. And acknowledging that they may not always 100% align, and articulating and understanding that and understanding where the differences are and why. And then start thinking about how you're going to incorporate the language of UDL into your everyday language. You know, just start with one key word at a time, right? If you started using the word options or barriers and incorporating that regularly into the way that you talked about, thought about, planned, and designed your instruction, you would already be a long way down the UDL path. I really like this idea of scripting out responses to one-size-fits-all statements. So you could just spend a week gathering some of those statements as you're going through the school day, listening carefully, and think about when is this, when is the way the person's approaching, they're thinking of it as the one approach to instruction is going to work for everybody. And then start scripting for yourself. How would you respond to those? I think it's really important to create a body of anchor examples for yourself. So create a lesson with choices for how students engage, how information is represented, and how they express what they know, and then keep coming back to that anchor example. And doing almost what Lizzie did, refining that example over time, but then also using that as a model for future design work. Definitely identify your UDL support colleagues, people who have who know UDL and you can go to, and reach out to me and Melissa. We can be your UDL support colleagues as well. Our emails at the beginning of every one of these webinars, and we really are serious. Please feel free to reach out. And then what do you want to pay attention to when you go into the school day? And then think about your favorite UDL metaphor. We shared some of those metaphors in the very first webinar of the series, so go back and watch that one. Choose the GPS metaphor, the lasagna metaphor, architecture, or the equality, equity, and universal design metaphor as places to start, to anchor your thinking, or the bowling metaphor. So come up with a plan for yourself so you can kind of sustain this work over time. Don't forget the curriculum disables the learner. You just hold on to that quote. That's a way to sustain the work. Thank you very much for engaging with the in mindset and in thinking about how to shift mindset. I am trying to get this hashtag UDL mindset going on Twitter. So if you tweet at all and want to tweet about today, use the hashtag UDL mindset. Also in the slides listed here are all of the resources that I used to do the research around mindset. So if you want to dig into things like global mindset and that sort of stuff, their resources are here. And also I included some additional slides looking at growth mindset, global mindset, and different framings of UDL. We often frame UDL from the accessibility context, but there are lots of other ways you can think about the concepts of UDL. And examples of mindset shifts. So there are some bonus slides in there if you want to dig more into thinking about mindset. So happy to answer any questions. Molly has put the link to the survey in there. Please fill out the survey so we can get feedback and do some redesign for future webinars and future presentations of this mindset content. So definitely happy to answer any questions or comments. Thank you very much.
Well, we're waiting to see if there's any questions. Thank you all for joining us today. We have one more session in this strand next Monday at 4:15. The title is Guideline Exploration of UDL Concepts, and we do hope you will join us for that last session. And we see some thank yous, so I'm guessing no questions. I will tell everybody there's a hair salon at the corner of my street, so I see that sign all the time, so I had to chime in.
Thank you, Molly.
Thank you so much, Melissa and Bill. I appreciate it, and we look forward to connecting next Monday.
All right.
All right.
Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks for everybody. Have a good night.
All right. Bye-bye.